Welcome to the Twinkle Talks EYFS podcast. Working in the early years is busy, funny, messy, and exhausting. Join me, Shana, some of the Twinkle EYFS team, special guest speakers, and other early years practitioners as we talk honestly about our experiences. Whether you're listening for CPD, on your commute, or to help you relax, Twinkle EYFS will share everything you need to know about all things early years.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Twinkle Talks EYFS with the Private Early Years team. My name's Katie.
And I'm Charlotte.
I'm Fliss.
And I'm Hannah.
And it's time for your bi-monthly instalment of Private Early Years Problems, which is where we all chat together about some of the questions you've submitted on our social media with the things that you guys are currently going through in your daily practice. So the first question we wanted to talk about today, which is potentially quite a controversial topic, I think, depending on your personal ethos and what your setting does, and that is, should we be allowed to use sticker charts or timeouts in earlier settings? So does anyone have any thoughts on that one?
Personally, especially timeout, I don't think that's appropriate. I don't agree with that. Sticker charts as well, not as a big fan. I mean, the only time I would use them is for potty training, that sort of thing. But I think, yeah, I feel like a lot of them are like behavioural strategies that are a bit outdated now, I would say, yeah. In some ways.
Has anyone here worked at a setting in recent years that's used any of those strategies?
I've seen people give time out, not that the setting agreed with it.
Oh, interesting.
They would do it off their own practice, but we weren't supposed to use it. So it was a little bit of like having to tell staff that, you know, we don't do time out. So
I'm going to put you in timeout for blah, blah in timeout.
They would think, I think a lot of it is frustration sometimes, and they don't always know, they're not always knowledgeable in other strategies of how to deal with children's behaviour, especially when toddlers are, you know, their little characters are coming out and they're trying to push the boundaries and see what they can get away with. I think some of them would just be like, get really stressed out and think, oh, go sit down over there, but actually not think about, you know, we don't do it here in this nursery. And there is a lot of other better ways that you can help children with learning, you know, what's right and wrong and what they shouldn't do and stuff like that. But
before we came on the podcast today, I did some research to see what other people's opinions were on timeout. And I read an article, and I'm really sorry, I can't remember the author's name now, but they were talking about how social isolation triggers the same points in the brain that are triggered by physical pain. And I found that so interesting.
Charlotte kind of mentioned it. I think people just do it as like a quick, easy fix, but like it's not actually fixing anything. You're not coming down to the root of like why the behavior happened and that sort of thing. You're not learning like about that child and whether they struggle to self-regulate, are they needing extra strategies to support. It seems like it's just like let's do that, and they're not actually learning anything from it. And like you say, that's quite an interesting study that it triggers them feelings for them. Like
I've seen examples before, I've seen it very particularly in one of my stubborn little nieces, where they'd be like, if you do that, you're going to sit on timeout. And she would weigh up that consequence in her head and be like, yeah, okay, great, I'll do it. So she would say she had something in hand, she'd throw it on the floor again, and then she'd go put herself out on the timeout. So it's the same with sticker charts. It makes it seem like what you're asking or requesting or a certain behavior, it makes it become a negotiation. And that's a different thing to being told that this is something we do or don't do, if you know what I mean.
I just don't see the point behind any of it. I think a lot of it's just a bit meaningless, like nothing. I've never seen anything other than like using sticker charts, like Fliss said, for potty training. But other than that, it just becomes, stickers don't mean anything. The timeout doesn't mean anything. It's not really doing anything in a positive way for those children. It just becomes a thing that they, like you said, like a negotiation where they can be like, oh, well, if I do this, I'll get this sort of thing. So I just don't think they, unless they're used well, not the timeout, but like the stick chart, I think they can be okay. But I just don't think the adult or the child really gains anything from the process of either of them.
I always remember a training I went on where we were talking about timeout, and then the trainer said, actually think of it as time in. Because if children are, you know, showing a behaviour, like throwing, something's going on, actually they probably need some time with an adult to like try and work through what's going on rather than putting them into timeout. So that's always stuck with me. And I think we've touched on that, like trying to actually pick up why they're behaving like that and what's going on for them. So rather than thinking of time out as being, you know, removing the child, actually maybe having time in and trying to work through those feelings is probably more productive long term.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way to round up that question, actually, because we've all said we don't necessarily agree with it personally, because they're not getting, the child isn't getting anything from it, but the child is showing you that by doing that behaviour or by having a certain response that they need some sort of support or emotional regulation, and that comes from the adult's input there.
Okay, so another question that we've seen, and I've seen this crop up loads of times, but it's something that we used to speak about as practitioners as well in my setting, is it normal for practitioners to spend their own money on resources? And I think this is a big thing in early years in general. Like, you're going, like, the whole of the UI first, like, teachers as well as, like, nursery practitioners, it seems quite an issue.
Unfortunately, I think it is normal, but I want to be super clear in the fact that I don't think it should be normal. But I think it is normal, because I think particularly in private settings, and no, do you know what, actually in school settings as well, funding is tight, and you get to a certain point in the year where budgets are low and they have to wait a couple of months before they can give you more. I'm not seeing practitioners going out and buying, you know, like, new sets of tables or chairs, but every practitioner I know has gone out and bought pens, or they've gone and bought the things they need for their messy tray. So I think it's become normalised, but I don't think it should be, because that's something that the setting should be supplying.
I guess with us, like, we had the budget for our room, and, like, sometimes if you'd wanted the big one, like, every room would agree to, like, fund their budget together for a big resource. But then, like, it'd be times when we maybe, it was our budget, but the room leader would just pick what she wanted for the room. But then I would notice, like, things that I'd maybe want for, like, my children and, like, to help in different areas that maybe she didn't pick up in the, like, resource budget and stuff. So I did once buy like some toys. It was some Paw Patrol, like, Small World characters, and it was only cheap in, like, home bargains. But I did just ask my manager first, like, am I okay to, like, buy this? And she said, yeah, just bring the receipt back and I'll give you the money back. So for that, it was all right. But then other times, like, I think at Easter, I remember buying, like, some little chicks and lambs, like, for a Small World train, like, some bird seed and random stuff like that. But I didn't get the money back for that. But yeah, like you say, messy tray stuff.
I've not heard of before, or, like, in my experience, and in the sense I worked at, that the room themselves has a budget. Mm-hmm. I've always worked that the manager has the budget, and you can go and ask the manager. The manager might say yes or no, but not that it was ever split on a room by room basis.
Yeah.
Because that's really interesting, because I think when you add in that you have to go to a manager, you're more likely to just not do it, because there's an extra chance of somebody saying no in the position of authority like that. Whereas actually, maybe if you were just going to your room leader, or you were agreeing in it within the room, you'd be more likely to ask for the money back or for put money towards something slightly more expensive than you normally would. That's so interesting.
Yeah, they did share the budget out. It was only, like, not a lot. I think it was only like £50 per room per, like, month or 2 months or something. It wasn't loads, but, like, I know the preschool room leader used to, like, pass the catalogue around and let all, like, her members of staff, like, star or, like, circle, like, some of the things that she wanted, what they wanted. So yeah, it works nicer. But yeah, there's little things that it wouldn't be your turn on the budget, or you wouldn't get it then, and you think, oh, this resource would be so good. You do just tend to just go and buy it yourself, I guess.
Yeah. What about in your experience, Hannah?
I think, like, this, it's like the little bit. So, like, for the Easter activity tray, if you don't buy those lambs and chicks, the tray is going to be pretty rubbish. So as a practitioner,
just some random cotton balls with nothing else.
Yeah. So as a practitioner, you want to make it nice and for Easter. And if that budget's not available, I think most of us, because we're nice people generally, go and buy those things. But like you said, I think it is normal, but I don't think it's necessarily okay. But I don't know where the line's drawn with that, because if you want nice resources and your manager's not funding them, it's really tricky to get that balance.
Agreed. What about you, Charlotte? What about your experience with budgets and resources?
I used to buy colouring books a lot, just because a lot of my children were into colouring. But I used to get money for certain children. I can't remember the exact word.
Like the pupil premium and stuff.
Yeah, so I used to get quite a bit of money for preschool, which the other rooms weren't happy about, but it wasn't my fault. They'd be like, well, why can't we have some? And I was like, well, it's for the children in preschool.
It's for that particular child, yeah.
So I used to use that to go through the catalogues and buy new stuff for, obviously, the children that were getting this money. But if you went out of your way to buy something, you generally didn't get your money back. I mean, I'd go into like toy shops all the time and like craft shops and have to restrain myself from buying a lot of things for work. Yeah, it's hard because you want to give the children everything they deserve and you want to get them loads of nice things, but then it should be the nursery themselves. And I know we live in a world where it's very expensive at the moment and everything is just prices skyrocketing, but yeah, I don't really think practitioners should be having to buy out their own money.
No, I completely agree. The money you make, it should be for you. You shouldn't be having to use that money to pay for things at work. So I don't encourage it at all. But I do know that in some settings, it's considered normal. But I think where you can, you should absolutely be trying to get that money back.
So we have seen on social media and lots of you guys talking about the topic of should pull-ups be banned in early years settings. So what do you guys think?
I always saw a trend with like pull-ups. So when I worked in the baby room, they'd all have nappies. Some of them would maybe have pull-ups if they're a bit of a bigger baby, like parents would put pull-ups on because that sort of thing, because they thought it was easier. But then I saw like they'd come down into toddlers and they'd still have nappies on for like maybe a month, 2 months, and then all of a sudden they'll be in pull-ups, but they're not even potty training yet. It was like a bit of like a trend. They moved to toddlers, we put them in pull-ups. It was when the potty training, yeah, fine, I can see it, because even though they've not made that actual decision to go, yeah, pants, some parents would be like, oh, we've introduced it a little bit. When you take them to get the nappy done, can you just sit them on the potty?
Mm-hmm.
I'd encourage them to like pull their pull-up down and then put it back on. Whereas if they were in a nappy, it was a waste because I'd have to take the nappy off, put a fresh one on, and the pull-up was dry. So yeah, I'm in two minds about it. They're a pain when you're changing 20 nappies of having to take the shoes off and like everything else off. But I think, yeah, they have their place in some places. When toddlers are potty training, I think pull-ups should be gone because it just confuses them.
Like you said, I do think they have their place if they're used as like a pre-potty training time. But otherwise, if you're potty training and still wearing pull-ups, it's confusing because it feels like a nappy, it sounds like a nappy, it looks like a nappy. So why can't you pee and poo in it from a toddler's perspective is what I think happens. I think to get them used to this idea of pulling it up and down and then associating that with the potty or the toilet, that's great. My issue with pull-ups comes in is when you've got these babies in a pull-up and they're already squirming around, trying to get them in and out of baby grows, you know, the ones with the little footholds, and then trying to get a pull-up off. I just think if they weren't potty training, it was really hard work. I actually do see a lot of people on social media saying that they have just like forbidden them from their settings. I've never worked anywhere like that personally, but I like the vibe.
I never understood a pull-up with pants over the top.
Make a choice.
Have a pull-up. And then they'd have a pair of knickers or a pair of underpants over the top of the pull-up. What's that about? That's another two layers they now need to get off. Just put the pants on or put the pull-up on, either one, not both. It used to stress me out. I'd be like, I don't understand the concept of this.
I agree with the confusion of a pull-up and toilet training. And if you're going to go for it, I think you go pants.
Let's commit.
But I do. I think I must be the minority here. I actually like a pull-up.
No, sorry.
I was going to say, I bet Hannah will have something different to say here because she's the one who's got a child out of us. So I reckon like...
I'm waiting for Hannah to be like, we only wear pull-ups in this house.
So quite early on, I changed pull-ups because it's different at home. And I do appreciate in a nursery setting, like you said, you've got your shoes to take on and off. But I think if you're trying to wrangle a toddler, a pull-up's actually easier. If they've not got their shoes, you can like wrangle them into it rather than trying to get the tapes done up. I think I'm in the minority, definitely.
A lot of parents also feel that pull-ups when they're toddlers, because they're more active and like running around, that sort of thing, the strap's not going to come undone on the nappy, like it's more secure, that sort of thing. I noticed it as well, like my nephew, he wore pull-ups quite early on as well. And I think it is maybe when I have my own children, maybe I'll change my opinion of it. But from a nappy perspective, when you're changing 20 nappies, just put them in a normal nappy, not a pull-up, please.
So if you, in a couple of years, notice that this podcast has just disappeared from the internet, it's because we've all changed our minds from having our own children. We don't want to be known as hypocritical. Cool, amazing. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Twinkle Talks EYFS. If you have any questions that you would like us to talk about our experiences in or give any advice on, just send us a shout on any of our social media platforms. That includes Facebook, Facebook groups, Instagram, Pinterest. If it's a social media platform, we're probably on it. But we'll chat to you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
So that's it for today's episode. I hope you really enjoyed it. If you would like to join in or would like to know more, then come and find us on our social media sites. We have a Facebook page, Facebook groups, an Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Pinterest, and YouTube. All the links of where to find us will be in our podcast description. Come and join the conversation. And whatever you're doing today, I hope you have a great day.